All right, so this is the part we call the afterburn, okay? Some of you already feel pretty burned. So if you're not too crispy, you can come on up and make a comment or ask a question. Also on the live stream, we're opening up the chat, so you can go ahead and type those in as well. And so we got our shamash team back there with our senior shamash, our head shamash, Kurt, back there as well. So he's actually live and in person today, but he's always in the chat, helping to keep things where they need to be. All right, we'll begin here with Rocky.
Thank you, Rabbi. Let me see if I can make this coincide with your teaching. So last night at the Torah study, it talked about the offerings. And it says here, and bear with me, I don't have my glasses, that the literal meaning to offering in the Greek, I do believe it's in the Greek, yes. I'm sorry, in the Hebrew, that which one brings to God. Well, that makes sense. And in Romans, chapter 12 in Romans, you know, it says that the very first verse is, I urge you, therefore, brethren, that the mercies of God, that you present your bodies as a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which you rationally serve. And this word rational, if you look up spiritually or spiritual gifts, it's your rational soul. So it makes a lot of sense that it's absolutely rational. And I'm losing my place. I knew I'd do that.
Let's just continue where you are in 12, though. So just along with what I said, the next verse says, do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. So again, it's connecting the idea that if we're going to be a living sacrifice, if we're going to be pleasing to him, because the idea of the sacrificial system is that this was going to be a sweet aroma to him, not because he likes the smell of burnt animal, but because it's pleasing to see our obedience, but also the idea of not conforming to the world, but conforming to him.
Well, thank you. But it's rational that everything that happens that Yahweh is doing has to happen in the physical. So he has to have something in place. He has to have a structure in place where I can trust another human being, that I can trust this body of believers. And I believe that's here. That's why I'm here. And to me, that's very rational.
Well, look, again, and in some translations, like in the ISR, it says reasonable, which also the same thing. It's very reasonable to expect that if he expects you to do certain things, that he has a way for you to do it. Okay? I mean, that's a rational and reasonable thing. So the more he talks about, and I know a lot of you never heard that from other teachers, the more he talks about structure and your need for it, and that he provides it, then it should be reasonably understood and rational for you to look for it and find that it exists. Just like going for the Ephesians 4:11 five-fold ministry thing. If it's supposed to exist, you should be able to find it. And so that's rational and reasonable. And so then you come here and you believe this is part of that or way that that manifests. I don't know that that's irrational to say. I think it's very rational if you line it up and see that it actually functions as he says it would. Because if he says you need something, you should be able to find it. Right. Okay?
No, I guess why I've been saying this, because it's I'm baffled at that people leave here and go to Judaism. Because I've listened to some of them rabbis, and they believe in reincarnation. You know, they believe in a savior, but they don't believe the savior's here. So it's like, well, that's easy. I could believe in that, and then I don't have to transform. You know, I don't have to transform. He hasn't been here. No, he hasn't shown me how to do it yet. And then they believe that, you know, in their goodness, because they are, you know, the other stick. They are doing good. They are, you know, following the commandments. So in that sense, they're good. But they believe that by being good, that they're going to bring Yahweh down here. It's like, wow, but it still baffles me that they do that.
Well, look, you know, there's a lot of rational reasons for these things. I mean, when you consider the experience that the very quickly Christianized Messiah became. In other words, after Messiah was here, and some of the horrible things that the Jewish leadership did even to Messiah and Rome did to Messiah, etc., very hard for the Jews, considering in the name of this Messiah they were persecuted for most of the last 2,000 years, to believe that this Messiah was the Messiah, okay? Because those who believed him to be the Messiah were killed and martyred very quickly in the first 100 or so years, okay? So it's not unreasonable for them to struggle with this, okay? Now, some of you are like, well, of course, so if I show them who Yeshua is, they'll understand he's not the way Jesus is portrayed. But most of them are going to think you're trying to sneak Jesus into him, just changing the name. So either way, you can't win that argument. So it's not completely off the wall to understand where they're coming from, okay? And the answer always comes down to the same thing. Even those of you that were raised with the Christianized Jesus church thing couldn't see past that any more than the Jews could see past where they are without a touching from above to reveal that, right? So it is rational and understandable why they can't see it, because he hasn't revealed it to them. Just like you couldn't see what you couldn't see until he revealed it to you. And that's part of the Father and the Son teaching, all right? They do all the revealing. We cannot force that issue. So when you look at them, they're doing what they understand, just like the Christians do what they understand. I'm not picking on them. I'm just trying to tell them, by the way, you've been lied to pretty good. If you're watching me, maybe he's trying to get your attention. I don't know. I'm not trying to pop your bubble. I'm trying to point out that what you're being told doesn't match up with this, which is a much stronger, easier argument to talk to a Christian about than to talk to a Jew about trying to accept a whole part of the book that doesn't work for them because of how they picture Messiah that is presented here, okay? And so that's really the challenge. So I don't have a problem where they are and what they understand. I don't want to go back and be one of them. I was. I started there, okay? I'm not interested in going back. I have no problem with where they are. I think that they're going to make an easy enough transition in the end, easier than some Christians will, because they already understand the need for Torah, all right? And they also understand the need for Messiah to some degree. They just don't believe he's been here already. And so coming to find out that he truly is the Messiah is going to be a much easier leap than having Christians decide, oh, I got to be covenanted and keep Torah. Because that changes everything about their life in a whole different way. A Jew's life does not change mechanically a whole lot if once he believes in Messiah. Okay? But to a Christian believing in the Torah now, it changes everything about your life. So it's an interesting sort of deal.
Thank you. That's helping. Because Jeremiah 16 verse 19, that really messed me up. I heard one of the Jewish rabbis talked about it. It says, Yahweh, my strength and my fortress, my refuge in the day of affliction. The Gentiles should come to you from the ends of the earth. Surely my fathers have inherited lies, worthlessness, and unapproachable things. And I was like, whoa, that's... he was using that, saying that, oh, yeah, everybody's going to come to Judaism. I'm like, wait a minute. Of course, I just turned that off. I'm like, oh, I don't need to watch that no more.
Well, look, and look, the problem that they have, okay, is that there are blind spots. It says there's blindness in both sides, okay? And the blind spot on their side is this idea of losing track of that this is not about being Jewish. It's about being Israel, okay? And so when they teach, they're talking about everybody should come and become Jewish. The nations are going to come and become Jewish. That's just not true, okay? All right, the two sticks that come together in Ezekiel 37, as well as Jeremiah 31, where it talks about the renewing of the covenant, talks about the two sticks in Ezekiel and the renewing of covenant becoming about Israel, okay? Not about Judah. Judah is one stick. Ephraim is the other stick. They come together and they're now talked about as Israel in Ezekiel. In Jeremiah, it says, I'm going to renew my covenant with the house of Judah and the house of Israel. And then after that, he only talks about Israel because they come back together, right? So there is a blind spot there for our Jewish brothers, okay? Look, in the simplest of terms, each side has half the equation, even though the Christian side has a very confused half, okay? The Jews do too, because they've got the Torah with the Talmud and all the other stuff. So their half is kind of confused somewhat too. But one side believes that Messiah has been here, making it real simple, okay? The other side believes that he hasn't, but believes that the Torah is relevant, that it's our life is supposed to be a Torah life, where this side believes, no Torah, but I believe Messiah has been here. This side says, well, Messiah's not been here, but I believe in the Torah. So they have, in those simple terms, half the equation each. What we present is the full equation together, okay? A proper understanding of Messiah in also the context of a proper understanding of covenanted Torah observance, okay? And so hopefully we're doing much more along the lines of what they would have been doing in the first century, with the people like James and the Jerusalem Council and Paul, etc., what they would have looked like doing this. Okay? All right. Anything else?
Oh, I could probably stand up here for a long time, but thank you very much. That really helped me.
Good, good.
For what it was worth.
Yeah. Look, and I'm going to cut the Jewish brethren a little bit of an extra sort of, I don't know, call it slack or whatever. I'm going to cut them a little slack, so to speak, is that they, to a certain degree, have Messiah in a much more clear way than the Christians do. Because the Yahweh talking to them that they believe in was Messiah talking to them that they believe in. Where the Messiah that the Christians believe in doesn't match up with almost anything, okay? And some of you are going to get real mad at me. Go listen to Beware False Prophets, okay? Well, that'll be explained. Okay, but what I need you to understand, though, is cut the Jewish side of the equation a little bit of slack in terms of how we pick on them, because Yeshua came to explain that to them. That's part of what he said. He says, I came to show you the Father. You think you've had him all along. No, you've had me. I'm going to tell you there's another level, okay? And that's really basically, paraphrasing real strongly here, what he was trying to say to them. You've had me. So if that's true, I believe it's true. So don't pick on them for rejecting Messiah. If they're keeping the Torah, they're not rejecting Messiah. They're just rejecting him coming in the flesh when he did and doing those things. Because if they're embracing what happened in Mount Sinai, they're accepting Messiah. Do you understand what I'm saying? Okay? They just don't see him as Messiah. But the being that was talking to them in covenant is the same one. Okay, I'm not a oneness doctrine guy. Don't get confused. I'm not a Trinitarian. Go listen to the Father and the Son teaching, okay? So that this will make some sense to you. All right, Valentina.
So first of all, it was a great teaching, appreciate as always. It. Thank you so much. So you said we can't date or marry anybody who's like not in the walk.
No, I said you shouldn't.
Okay, shouldn't. To me, that's the same thing. So.
Good. Well, good. That shows you trust the vertical. That's good.
Thank you. So that's out of the question, but what about like best friends? Like,
again, be careful. Like with friends, the level of influence one may pull on the other. Also remember that male and female as friends doesn't ever work out where at least one of the two wants more.
Mine's a girl, so.
Then you should be okay. All right. So if you're good friends with somebody who's not in the walk, that's okay. I've got some good friends I've had over the years that are not in the walk. Just be aware that there can be potentially a pull. And just be aware of that, okay? You can be friends with people in the world. That's fine. Just don't allow them to draw you into being of the world with them, okay?
It works out because she doesn't really believe anything, but we have like the same core beliefs about like life and stuff.
Okay.
So I'm just making sure.
And that's fine. Listen, I have friends that are not in the walk that I've had from large chunks of my life. And when we hang out or talk, we get along just fine. Okay. And I guess if we lived closer together, we may spend more time together than we do right now. But the thing is, I would always be aware of the potential pull that could be there. Okay. Where all of a sudden you get a little weaker and go off and do something with them that they want to do that you know you shouldn't. Okay, that kind of thing. All right? So it wouldn't be like they change your beliefs, but they might get you weak enough to go out and do something partying-wise or some other thing that you wouldn't or shouldn't be doing. Okay? And that's the temptation, you know, that I would be protective against. All right, Mr. Pete.
So, Rabbi, I've been given a lot of thought. I thought about it, this teaching all the way up here today and all throughout the week about what I would want to get out of this. And I linked this to what you were talking about in service during the feast. Well done, good and trustworthy servant is aspirational. It's something we hope to hear. And I had, previous to today, I had always thought of that in terms of when I die, that's what I hope to hear to get into the kingdom. But that's not the case at all. It's something we should hope to hear every day. In everything we do, because even the servant who buried the talents in the dirt, he did something, but it wasn't well done and it wasn't good. And so I was thinking in terms of it's not enough to just do something. It's not enough to just show up at the feast because that is doing something.
Right.
But it's not well done. And it's not good because you're not giving all of yourself, which is what well done should be. You're not taking advantage of the talents that the master gave to us. That it's not good in that respect. And it's not really trustworthy in that Trustworthy means that there's something expected of you. So if you are performing the way you should, people can count on that.
Right.
And that's why when you mentioned the verse in Deuteronomy, he is Elohim, the trustworthy El, guarding the covenant. I thought about when Moshe gives when he tells the Israelites what his name is, I am, and I've heard I am defined as I am that I will be, which means it's eternal. It's something you can always count out. You can count out in here. It says for 1,000 generations, but it's beyond that.
Right.
But for us, trustworthiness has to be earned all the time. You know who Scott Norwood was? Scott Norwood was the place kicker for the Buffalo Bills, who led the league in after points. And on the first time they went to the Super Bowl, he missed what would have been the game-winning kick. And so from that on, he was trash. He was known as wide right. And so that's what happens with us. Trustworthiness is something we have to maintain all the time, because if we ever slip, if we ever fail, that's what we're left with. We have to regain that. And the only way we regain that is through service to Him and starting over and being well done and it being good and being trustworthy.
That was well said. Very well said. Okay. And that also led to the ultimate 4 losing Super Bowls that the Bills had in almost within like 10 years or 5. Well, I mean, it was terrible. All right. So, you know, look, the bottom line is you want to hear these words because you have all 3 elements. Okay. Well done. You have the word well actually in front of it. It's well done, not just you did something, but was it well done? All right. Some of you may, we're going to talk about this at some point when we talk about the next part within the trustworthy is that Israel, while Yahweh is trustworthy, Israel's had an issue with being trustworthy, okay? We've not always been that trustworthy. And what kind of things would that might look like? What would that look like for you? I mean, are you trustworthy with your Sabbath observance? Well, I keep the Sabbath, I don't work, okay? But that's not well done. There's more to just not working, okay? There's more active participation. If you have a place like this to go to, do you show up? Or do you just show up if you feel like showing up? And then when you do show up, do you show up on time? We got a bunch of you to show up whenever you show up. Well, why wouldn't you show up on time? You know? Some of you on live stream, you don't show up until when I'm about to teach, because that's, you know, we watch the numbers change. Okay? There's a lot less people on when we start at 1 than by the time we get to the teaching time. Okay, about 200 different, you know, is the number difference between, you know, it might be like 300-400, you know, early on, and it gets to be 500-600 by the time the teaching starts, because people just finally start tuning in because they're waiting for that part. I mean, what is your level of expectation of what he expects? What's your expectation of his expectation? What is your understanding of his expectation? So I appreciate that, Pete, very much, okay? Same thing with the feasts. You know, what do you think he expects of you so that your participation in showing up at a feast when you go home and he's going to look at you and say, well done, you were good and trustworthy and a servant in your observance of that little piece of this deal, right? And how does that fit to all of those things? How do you deal with your tithing and your money? How do you deal with your attendance at feasts? How do you deal with your the way you treat coworkers and workers if you're an employer? And there's, you know, all of the Torah that has to do with all these different aspects of life, okay? How are you dealing with your lusts and things? If you're married, are you lusting after anybody? Do you deal with your anger like you want to kill somebody, right? Yeshua says, don't do that. You know, the murder verse is not just about murdering, right? That commandment. So, I mean, are we actually doing well? Because he would have said, you know, to the Jewish community at that time, oh, well, you know, of old it says not to commit adultery, and you think you're great because you didn't do it. But you wanted to. So that's not well done. Now, it was still done, like you didn't commit the actual act, but it wasn't well done. And you really weren't trustworthy to your spouse, okay? So I'm just saying I think I like the way you brought that out. There's other aspects to this more than just doing, okay? Which, again, you see the one with the one who just buried it. He did something. It just wasn't what was expected, all right? All right. Craig.
Yeah, knowing nothing about sports and to hear that you're that good at something and you choke at the end, man, that stinks. I'm sorry, I had never heard of that. Yeah. But
that's okay. Norwood's in the same boat with Jackie Smith, so
whoever that is, that's great.
All right, he's the guy that kept the Cowboys from winning a Super Bowl, so by dropping a pass in the end zone, that was, and he's a Hall of Famer on top of it.
I could.
But he's only still going to be known for that stupid drop pass.
It's nothing good. It's always the bad. Every time it's the bad. That's the only thing you remember for.
Hit him right in the chest. Anyway, sorry.
When I was in the military, I used to have a very good friend of mine. We were very good friends. He was not a person that liked God at all or anything about it. And I was a Christian at the time. And I thought to myself, you know, God will always bless you if you follow him. And what you taught was excellent teaching. I loved it. But he did bring up one thing to me that always made me kind of go, I don't know why, but why are there so many people evil out there that don't care about God, that are so well blessed, that just keep to get everything good? And I could never answer but saying, I don't know why. I don't know why God lets them move up so fast and so well into this world, while many of the people that do believe in him and are Torah observant, and as I believe now, are always in a way just struggle so much. And I never could understand and never could give him the right answer. Could you help me with that?
All right. So first of all, there were even prophets that wondered that, okay, that said, why do the evil ones seem to prosper, you know? And the answer is kind of simple. Look, there are rules, I call them rules or procedural things that either work or don't work in this world. Forget about Torah or not, okay? I mean, if you want to get wealthy, there's certain behaviors that will help you get wealthy. If you want to get healthy, there's certain behaviors that will help you get healthy, regardless of the Creator being involved whatsoever, okay? There's also the evil decide that they can break rules, okay? So they can shortcut things. And so they'll seem to prosper because they'll break rules. I mean, there's a lot of people doing all kinds of, you know, illegal things that make a lot of money, and they look like they're prospering with their big houses and everything, but they're not playing by the rules. Okay, so it appears like they're being blessed and successful. It's not that they're being blessed. Yahweh's allowing them to do whatever. Why does he allow them? Because he wants to see how tempted you would be to try to shortcut things to have what you might want to have instead of doing it the right way. Okay, sure, it'd be easy to take the job that offers overtime, double time on Saturday and make a bunch more money. That would be simple, but it's still wrong, right? And so there's a certain level of prosperity that happens just because there are functional things that lead to it. All right, now, another reason why the body doesn't tend to have the level of success is because the body has been indoctrinated for 2,000 years that it comes from outside of you. The evil ones are making it all happen themselves, okay? They're putting in the work, whether they're doing it in a proper way or not. They're still putting in the work. See, we've been told that it all comes from outside. And so that also is why a lot smaller percentage of the believing, trustworthy, Torah observant, messianic community have struggled more with successes because they haven't shifted the gear to owning. See, that's part of where the Level Up class comes that I teach, part of the counseling that Elder and I do with people and trying to help them with their personal development is help people own that you can go wherever you want to go. Stop waiting for it to come from outside. It's got to come from inside. Okay? So again, it's always, again, the appearance that we see. All right? Also, by the way, from a he doesn't give it to you point of view, it forces you to always depend on him on some level. Okay, to trust in him, to pray for, you know, insight and help in whatever way. Not outside giving it to you, but inspiration and encouragement. Hey, you can do this. Which, by the way, he says to you every time we have a Rosh Chodesh through me. Every time through me on every Rosh Chodesh, I tell you, you can do this. That's an encouragement from the above. That's part of my role to speak his words, to say you can do this. All right? But let's understand. It's only an appearance. It appears like he's allowing or blessing them. Well, he's certainly allowing it. Look, anybody who wants to be successful can. You just got to put the work in. It's as simple as that. And by work, that means you got to find out what gets you where you want to go, who knows how to do it, get that instruction, do what they did to get there, and you can get there too. In anything. It's a lot of work. Don't think for a second these people didn't work hard to get where they're, you know, where they are. A lot of them are obsessive workaholics that get there because they put in the effort. Okay, a lot of us are not willing to put in the effort, good or evil. Okay, man tends to be lazy. So, which, by the way, allows for people to be extremely successful because the competition is very low. It just is. If you're willing to put that kind of effort out there, you're not competing against much. Okay, it's just a small percentage that are really going to go out there and do the kind of work. Okay? I've been very successful now in my life. I've been successful many times in my life and unsuccessful other times in terms of trying different things. But I absolutely put an effort in that most people won't do. Okay? The hours that I've worked, the things that I've studied and tried and learned, and the effort, okay, is the difference. All right? You know, Dwayne The Rock, you know, Dwayne, right? Johnson, The Rock. You know, he has said in some of his personal development sort of talks, he said he knew that he couldn't beat certain people at certain things. He said, but I knew I could outwork them. He says, I knew I could do more than they would do. I knew I was willing to do. That's how I knew I could beat them. Okay? Even though they may have been bigger, stronger, whatever, initially, than I could outwork them. Okay? I've always had that same thought. You're not going to outwork me. So if we're competing, I will outwork you. You will quit before I do. Okay? So anybody can have anything if they're willing to pay the price. Some prices shouldn't be paid because some prices are shortcuts. If you pay the price doing things the right way, that's a price you can pay. But you got to find, make sure you don't lose the balance in your life. But just, anyway, that's something you can counsel about. But that's a good point, Craig. I appreciate it. Realize that there are prophets that have said the same thing. Yahweh, why do the evil people seem to prosper? And meanwhile, we're suffering. Well, because he expects more from us. And we actually have a reciprocal relationship of when we do right, he blesses. When we do wrong, he curses. We actually have that actively in our covenant. And we tend to do wrong often. So we end up bringing curses upon ourselves. The rest of the world doesn't have any of that. They do one way or the other, it doesn't matter. As long as whatever they're doing should work, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. It's more just basic way the world works. Okay, hopefully that helped a little bit. Craig, did that answer your question?
Yes, sir, it did. Thank you.
Good, okay. Shira.
Thank you, Rabbi. Excellent teaching. I loved your thing about good in Genesis 1 and the second day and the seventh day. We're creating space to make room for something to good. Happen
right.
That was good. That I you could have preached an hour on that, and I would have been, that is really deep. I'd like to share, just from an experiential point of view with all of this, a lot of times I feel like being involved with this ministry, I feel like I'm sure that I would feel if I walked out on the Grand Canyon on that observation deck that goes way out over the canyon and the bottom is glass. And you're stepping out there. I've never done this. Maybe one day I'll get to, but you're stepping out there and there's nothing under you but thousands of feet of canyon.
Right.
And I think it's because it's really been a balancing act and a back and forth thing for me, as you know, trying to maintain solidity and security in something that we've really not seen for thousands of years. And just the fact that in this ministry, you can stand up and say, look, I've looked for people who teach what I teach. I can't find them anywhere. It feels like, yeah, I have to grab onto that emunah. I have to grab onto the trustworthiness of the Elohim who's preserved me for 74 years and 11 years in this walk, actually more, just to stay in that balance. Because over here you have what Yahweh himself began through Yeshua at creation, the formation of everything that is, and on into the Israelite experience and the deliverance from Egypt, and then on into the exiles and the development of Judaism and all those years and years of things that have got piled up on top of Judaism.
Sure.
And then, of course, we have 2,000 years of Christianity, which most of us have come out of. And you're coming in and saying, now, I'm going to show you by the voice of Yahweh how to get rid of all the Jewish traditions that they made into commandments And you don't, you can do them, be blessed in it, but don't look at them as commandments. And then over here, you have a living Messiah who showed up in the flesh.
Right.
And made a way for you, but drop all the paganism from Christianity. Right. And so I think, you know, a lot of times as I get more and more deep into this, my heart just aches for all of us because we're out on that glass deck.
Right.
And I've been kind of in the into the minor prophets lately. And today I happen to wear a piece of jewelry that you can't tell, but it's a picture of the hand, the two sticks in the hand of Ezekiel.
Right.
And that was a miracle. And I just thank you for, and the leadership here, all of you, for being willing to walk out on that deck ahead of us into the miracle. There, this is nothing that's happened. And I feel like he's starting a regathering. He's starting something that
yes.
is just beyond what any of us have seen or understand. We can't really pick up books and talk about it unless we have someone to help us understand what went on when Yeshua showed up in the flesh and what an upside down experience that was for people and how few were actually able to stay with him. And so I just am saying all that to say, praise Yahweh for the miracle. Praise Yahweh that he is trustworthy because we're in the middle of something that he promised through the ancient prophets. And we don't exactly know how to define what we're in the middle of, but as you say, taste and see that it's good. Once you've tasted,
amen.
Once you've tasted it, right. That's how I know that you're here from Elohim.
Amen.
And I'm following.
Amen. Amen. Look, look. Look, for whatever your thoughts may be, for good or bad or whatever, I think that it should be at least agreed that this is different, all right? I mean, I could turn on a lot of different Messianic congregations around, and they're all going to have messages that are, in essence, very similar, okay? You're not going to hear a whole lot of very strong encouragement that you have to do anything, okay? I'm not going to hear that anywhere. Now, they might tell you a little bit about things you do need to do, but the level of putting it on you, your part on you, you're not going to hear, okay? And the encouragement that not only is it yours to do, but that you can do it. Okay, you'll hear a little bit of that when they talk about maybe keeping the holy days or keeping a Sabbath or something, but you're not going to hear that strength of that this is all about your part and understanding his part and which is which. And so this ministry is very different. I don't know how you want to look at it or not, but also recognize that everybody that's ever left here, okay, came here for the wrong reasons. For the most part, okay? Because if they came for the right reason, they wouldn't have left. If they understood what they were coming here to experience and to see and to interact with, then they wouldn't have left because then they would understand what the Father's doing here, okay? That's just my opinion. But then it was delivered in some way or something didn't happen or something disappointed. Do you think people were disappointed in Moses? All the time. He did not do everything they wanted to do the way he wanted to do it. They were whining at him all the time. But yet, they had to recognize that he was the one speaking for Yah. Do you believe in Ephesians 4:11 that there are people to speak for Yah today? Are there prophets? Are there teachers? Are there apostles? Are there evangelists and shepherds? I mean, you know. And what does that actually look like? Because lots of people claim to be those things. And so, you know, at some point, there has to be some realism brought into the mix that, you know, this is different, okay? And why is it different? Because I choose to make it different, or because he chooses to make it different? That is a big difference. Okay? Ashley, and you're the last one, and then we'll go to live stream.
I wanted to come up here and say thank you. when I first moved here, actually when we moved to the new house, I discovered some things I didn't throw away, and all those pyramids and stuff. I wanted to say thank you for letting me dumpster dive and get in there and just try to smash it to smithereens.
That's fine.
I had to do that because it was worth quite a bit of money, and I didn't want anyone to take it and try to use it for their own thing. But I was wondering, when I leave, after I go do those things and I go home, why do I have this little tiny thing inside me going, maybe you shouldn't have done all of that?
Because you were so connected to it at one point. It's hard to just release all that, okay?
But it felt so good in the moment to release it.
It did. It did. But you can't, look, it's like, I don't know how many people out there believe in chiropractic, but you can't go to the chiropractor for a problem you've had your whole life, have them fix it once, and now it's fixed. Because your whole life, it was a certain way. So it needs to be adjusted over and over again for a while until the body figures out the new way. You had enough of a thought of conviction to do what you did, and you felt the cathartic release when you did it, but it can't just release all of the connection you had to something for the, you know, all that part of your life before that. It takes a little bit of time, okay?
I was hoping by smithereens it would be literally that's it. You can't go back.
Well, but that doesn't change your emotion. It might say, I wonder if I overreacted, okay?
Okay.
Because a part of you still has a connection. That will dissipate over time as long as you keep shutting that part down.
And I absolutely did do the right thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. No. And then my second thing is...
especially after the verses we read today.
Well, that's what made me remember it.
Sure.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, I'm a very big vision board person.
Mm-hmm.
And I had help with Elder on it. He didn't help me with what the pieces were, but I wanted to make sure the pieces I picked were okay and kosher and all that. And today when I was sitting there and you were talking about good and trustworthy servant, I realized I put good and trustworthy on the bottom. And I put all the Shabbat stuff. Does it matter? And I try to put it in a vertical. My blue came out. I try to put it in a vertical order. Does it really matter for that? Or am I putting too much in? Because I really want to make it there, and I'm trying to put all my stuff that I have to do to hear the words, good and trustworthy servant. Does it matter what order, or is it just that you do things?
I guess for each person, it may be a little different.
I don't mean like for vision board purposes. I mean in my life, in order, does it matter?
The point is you have to get it all done. Again, for each person, it may be a little different. Okay?
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Okay. Look, you know, when you talk about well done, good and trustworthy servant, shouldn't that start with the person in the microphone? Okay, so how good and trustworthy are they if they're not wearing seat, for example? You know, and I've got mine, obviously, okay? I mean, simple things that should be little hints of the person talking, how much you should be listening. Some basic things. Like, do they take off on Shabbats just because they're tired? They just need a day off. I hear this and I can't believe it. Like, I don't understand that at all, okay? I mean, if you happen to be traveling, and you're traveling, and there's no way to not, you know, miss Shabbat because you're traveling, I get that. Like when I go to Odessa, when I'm going to go to South Africa. But to tell your group, hey, listen, I'm just taking the week off from Sabbath services. I take the week off and let Rabbi Tom teach. I'm still here. I'll take the week off and let Elder Billy teach. I'm still here. Okay? I mean, are you trustworthy? You tell everybody they need to show up, and you don't show up. And I've seen some groups do that on a regular enough basis. I don't understand. Now, I do understand if you're taking a vacation, and that vacation has you away, and part of that away is going to cover a weekend, well, sure, you're going to miss the Shabbat. But you still should be, and I would be, on the live stream and attending and doing, right? I'm not just taking the day off. But I don't see, so you should be looking to see what kind of a servant and how trustworthy and how good, what are they doing? What kind of example is a leader setting for you? Okay? All right, I tell you guys how hard you need to work, and then you have to watch and see how much I work. I mean, I don't know that you can see, but not only will I work on a Friday night for Zone 3, all day Saturday, do a Zone 1 and a Zone 2, and then counsel until midnight, and then Sunday come in and do a Rosh Kodesh or a Purim, and I'll be here also doing paperwork and running the offering and whatever else. I mean, I will still be working through the weekend, all the way through. It doesn't matter that I worked all through the other stuff. To set the example, okay, you got to do what you have to do. All right. And so, like, even like today, I didn't come in until, not today, yesterday, I didn't come in until like 1:30, 2 o'clock. Elder and the others were here earlier, but then I came in for the 4 hours they weren't, and I worked all the way through to the Erev Shabbat. Okay? Not that I wasn't doing any work at home, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm still going to find that time to be in and working and doing the thing. You call most ministries, you can't reach anybody because nobody's working. You know, we're always here, pretty much, okay? You can always reach somebody. Some of you say, well, I got the voicemail. Well, because sometimes somebody gets up and has to use the restroom or somebody's on another phone call and you can't get somebody, so call back. But we're still here, I promise you, okay? During the normal hours that you would expect. Not seven on Saturday. Some of you guys still try to reach us and leave messages today, which is crazy. You see we're standing right here on the podium and you're still leaving messages. You know. Well, I didn't want to bother you. I knew you were on the podium. So I said, well, why are you bothering? Why are you doing that while we're here? You can't wait? So it's interesting. All right, live stream.
All right, from C4, would it be fair to say that if you did sell the Xmas stuff on eBay, you'd be giving the buyer a stumbling block and that would be on you?
No. Look, the people that are buying the stuff who are doing that stuff, they're doing it and you're not causing them to do anything. They're already wherever they are. So no, stop trying to find another reason to not do it. You shouldn't do it because you shouldn't do it when we just read the verse. Okay? If you need more motivation than that, then you're in trouble. He said you should not benefit from these things. Okay, so don't. He said destroy them. Look, I don't think you have to do like Ashley and go in there and physically actually destroy. Throwing it in the garbage should be enough. But if it's something somebody may take out of the garbage you don't want them to take, well, then break it. And that's fine. Okay? And so that's terrific. But I'm just saying is, you shouldn't need, and I've heard this over the years, well, if it's not good for me, why would I give it to somebody else? Because they're not bubble pop. They don't know. They're going to buy it from somebody else anyway. So you're not stumbling them. You're just not doing what you're supposed to do. Okay, you're not supposed to sell it and benefit from it. You're supposed to destroy it and get rid of it. That's what he said. We read the verse. It was pretty straightforward. Okay? All right, next.
All right, Sandy Williams. I'm not at risk of being led astray, but is there anything wrong with friendships who basically follow all that I do, but follow a different calendar? It's nice to have these friends at least.
Look, you can have anybody as a friend. Just be aware that the more things that you have different, the more there's a chance to be pulled and drawn into something that you don't want to be drawn into. That's all. It's simple as that. All right? Look, you can have people that are, you know, so-called messianic covenanted people that are keeping a different calendar, as you say, all right? Just don't be sucked into the different calendar. I mean, that's, you know, but try to have some, at least you have the commonalities that you have. And I think that's fine. Just have an awareness that any relationship, the closer that relationship is, the stronger it is, the more it has the potential to influence you and pull you in a direction. That's all. Okay, just be aware of that, all right? All right? Because I had a person tell me, I'll give you an example how that could also work, not just with friendships. I had a person who's no longer in the congregation say to me, I want to go deeper. I love when people say that. What is there out there deeper than what I'm giving you? I don't understand. Okay, well, they want to get into this, that, or whatever. Especially they want to go into Judaism to get it. And so this guy said, well, I found this yeshiva online. I want to go to these classes. Can I do it? I said, yeah, you can do whatever you want. I said, I'm just telling you, if you do that, there's a really good chance you're going to end up leaving this and going into Judaism. And he's like, oh, no. Well, guess where he is now? He left and went into Judaism. I don't know if he's still doing it, but that's where he went. Because part of the teacher's job is to point out your blind spots. Oh, no, I would never. Really? Okay. You know, Kiefer's like, I would never deny you. Denied him 3 times, right? Okay, be careful when you say you would never. Anyway, next.
From Shakira Arnold, Matthew 25:21. Is this part of what Yah meant when he told us to be fruitful and multiply in addition to having children?
I'm not sure how that matches up with the verse necessarily, but yes. In other words, if he gives you something, then he expects you to multiply it or increase it. So when he said be fruitful and multiply, it wasn't just to bear children. It would also be being fruitful doesn't just mean bearing children. Being fruitful means producing something, okay? Children is something you can produce. But you could also produce all kinds of good works, right? Which gets you the well done. Okay, next.
All right. Rick Johnson, the nations and their pagan practices are easily recognized. What are red flags for those who believe in Yahweh and Mashiach?
Look, I don't know that I can make it simpler, but some of you are going to hate the answer. If it's not what we're doing here, it's probably a problem. Now, you're going to think that I'm a raging egomaniac. Well, that's fine. I don't really care. Okay? But that would be my answer. Okay? There's a lot of messianic claiming stuff, Hebrew roots claiming stuff, okay, whatever messianic Jewish stuff, whatever you want to put on it, all right, that is a mixed mess and has a lot of things that could draw you and tempt you into something, okay? So those are the red flags. If something's being taught that's not coming out of this ministry, it's probably a red flag. And you can call and ask if you have a question about it, but I mean, that's my simple answer. Okay, and again, that simple answer is going to sound like a raging egomaniac to some of you. What do you want an anointed appointed person to sound like anyway? Okay? I mean, if someone's anointed, don't you want them to say, look, you know what the red flag is? If I didn't say it, it's probably wrong. What else are you supposed to say? Do you agree with that? Do you understand? Okay, I mean, if it didn't come from me, it's probably not right. That's, you know, some of you are going to just quit because I said that, you know? I'm not listening to that guy anymore. Well, then why would you listen to me if that wasn't true? You understand? If that wasn't what you expected, why would you listen at all? Well, because I just like listening to all these different teachers. You know what? I was going to say this earlier, and I forgot to say it, but I actually said this to my wife this morning. I said, you know what? It's frustrating to me. You know what's frustrating to me? I don't have anybody I can listen to. See, when you guys want to listen to something, you put my teachings on. A lot of you do that, right? You want to listen to something Saturday morning, you put on a teaching. I don't get that. I mean, sure, I can listen to my own stuff. It's a little weird listening to your own voice. Okay? But I wish that, I mean, I used to be like you guys. I'd love to listen to teachings. Okay? Before I became the teacher, I was always trying to find, and I look for stuff all the time, and I can't get past 10 minutes. Okay? And so I just want to let you know I had a little envy moment for you guys because I was like, you know, right? We talked about that this morning. So, you know, appreciate what you have and the volume of it that you have, okay? And the abundance of it that you have. And that you're not like a lot of these guys just hearing, because we do this Friday night, that's fine, but a lot of places, all you get is the Torah portion, that's it. Every week, year after year, year after year, okay? That's all they're going to give you. They meet Saturday only, and you're getting one service, and all you're getting is the Torah portion. I'm not against the Torah portion. That's why we do it Friday night. But you need the application of all this stuff that you don't always get in the Torah portion. Okay? And so that's why I choose on Saturday with the bigger audience to give you the more meaty stuff of like, this is what you need to be doing. Right? Now, the foundation of it is the Torah portions. And I used to take an aspect of a Torah portion when I taught them and just teach a whole teaching launching from the Torah portion. But this is not what these guys do. Mostly they teach this, the Torah portion. And they just go through the whole thing and and that's it. And that's great. But I've also known people that said to me, if I've got to do that one more year, I'm going to shoot myself. You know, because they've heard the same thing year after year after year after year. Okay? And so I get it. You know, try being the one that teaches it year after year after year. Although every time, if you listen to it, I always throw some new things, I always, you know, because my notes are just, hey, say something about this verse. So I don't say exactly the same thing every year. Mostly I say you'll get the same consistent answers. The elder will listen to three or four of them before he does one and say, yeah, you pretty much said this on all of them. But if that's all you got, man, okay. And so, look, one of the first things I do when I find a teacher out there that someone might recommend to me is I go to their website and I look for their teachings to see if they teach anything that gives me an idea of where they stand on anything. And then all I find is they got a list of the Torah portions. I'm like, now I really got to dig to figure out what they believe. Got to find some Torah portion that may cover some piece of this. But if you want to know where I stand on almost anything, we've got teachings on them. Okay? So people say, well, how come you don't have a statement of beliefs on your site? No, I do. It's all the 600 teachings. Okay, that's what I believe. You want to know what I believe about salvation? There's a teaching. About grace, there's a teaching. About kashrut, there's a teaching. About covenant, there's a teaching. Whatever. All those things is a teaching. Okay? All right, next.
All right, from Helen, could you clarify how we guard the commandments in Yah's Torah so that we can be aligned with him?
Can I clarify how we guard the commands? Well, man, you got to listen to a bunch of the teachings. This person probably hasn't listened to a whole lot of the teachings. Look, the guarding of the commands means that you, let's see, I'm going to read it now because it came over. Can you clarify how we would guard the commands? And, okay, first of all, you guard them by making them a priority, but you can't guard them until you even understand what his expectation is of what you are to do or not do. So he says to keep the Sabbath, but if you don't know what it means to keep the Sabbath and what it looks like, then it's hard to do. It says not to murder, but if you don't understand what that looks like, you know, Yeshua had to explain deeper. It says not commit adultery, but he had to explain deeper. By the way, he says not to steal, and then you can go to chapters like 17, 18, 19 of Leviticus, and you see how he explains what that looks like. Okay, what that, or Exodus. I forget which book it's in. But anyway, there's a bunch of chapters that cover expounding. I call it expounding on the Torah. Okay? And so where he says, well, you can steal wages, and you can steal your boss's time, and you can steal. So there's more things to it, right? So you can't guard a commandment unless you understand what it is you are guarding. Okay, and then you watch over and make sure you're not breaking it. But if you don't understand the commandment, you know, well, I read my Bible. No, but that's not enough. You need a teacher, facilitator, to help you understand the depth of what it's trying to tell you and link all the verses together that need to line upon line, you know, verse upon verse, precept upon precept, right? So you have to have that, you know, skilled laborer who's trained to do these things and anointed to do these things to help you with that part. All right, next.
Jeff and Leanne Benson, a question regarding not intermarrying or being enmeshed with people and or things opposite our walk. Would this include our work and our workplace? Since I currently work with Christian churches and ministries.
Okay, so generally I would say, no, it probably doesn't have a lot to do with your workplace unless you're working for a denominational or belief system based workplace. Like, you know, there are people that I've had talk to me how they work literally at some headquarters of a church, or they work for some church or some denomination, some other thing. Yeah, that could be a problem. Okay, I'd be looking for another job. Why would I want to be helping that system? Okay, go find another job. I don't mean quit your job. I said find another one. Okay, and exit as fast as, you know, you can make that work out. But I would not be working for another belief system as a job. Okay? All right, next.
Rick Johnson, if we call Jews who reject Mashiach brothers, are Christians who supposedly believe in Mashiach but reject Torah brothers also?
Look, I'm referring to, when I say anything about referring to the Jewish community as brothers, they are genealogically brothers, okay? Okay, we have Judah as a, by birth, part of covenant. Now, of course, their being by birth part of covenant and behaving like they're not doesn't mean that it doesn't avail them. That's when Paul says things like, those who, notwithstanding their circumcision, act like they're uncircumcised, then their circumcision is basically of no avail, right? So we don't refer to them as brothers, like Christians refer to everybody as brother who's supposed to be Christian, because we're really only referring to the brethren as those that are part of Messianic Torah-observant Israel. Okay, those who are believing in Messiah and are Torah-observant covenanted. Okay, but when I talk about our older brother Judah, I mean, they've been around longer, and they, by birth, are brothers. Look, I have two younger brothers. By birth, they're my brothers. You understand the difference now? A lot of you have brothers and sisters that by birth are your brothers and sisters. So the Jews are our brothers by birth. All right? Not by behavior necessarily, because I know a lot of Jews that keep nothing. Most of the Jewish community I grew up in kept nothing, okay? So, and there's a lot that keep everything and beyond, Talmudically and Kabbalistically and everything. So it just depends, right? There's a wide spectrum. But the point is, when they're referred to by me as brothers, I'm talking about the fact that they are one of the 12 tribes, okay? As opposed to covenanted Israel by behavior, all right? All right, next.
From Milton Kent Jr., Rabbi Steve, so 1 Peter 4:19 would be linked to this teaching as well. Is that correct?
All right, you're forcing me to look something up.
1 Peter 4:19.
Yes. and probably one of the verses that I'm going to cover at some point. Okay, I don't have all my verses for this teaching in front of me. So 1 Peter 4:19 says, "So then those who suffer according to the desire of Elohim should commit their lives to a trustworthy creator in doing good." Yes. I mean, that is going to be a part of what we're talking about when we get there. And that verse is probably in my list of verses we're going to cover. I just don't have all of it laid out in front of me right now. I only printed the pages I thought we'd use today. So, but notice what it's talking about, okay? It's talking about the idea that when we recognize that we suffer because the desire of Elohim is playing out the way it's playing out, and we're not doing it, whatever it is, so it's bringing some suffering, that should strengthen our commitment of our lives to a trustworthy creator, okay? And we should do that by doing good. Because the verse says we should commit to our lives to a trustworthy creator in doing good, okay? And so it has to do with that. I don't want the whole context of this section, okay? Because really in verse 16, it says, if you suffer believing in Messiah, don't be ashamed, okay? So the encouragement then by the time we get to verse 19 is, hey, just because you're suffering, recommit even stronger to the trustworthy creator that, hey, it's worth going through all of this because he's trustworthy and we need to just keep doing good. So yes, that section will be covered. I'm 99% sure. But just to make sure, I'll put a little... Got my pen out of my pocket here. I'll just write it on here. 1 Peter 4:19. Okay? Whoops. But I'm 99% sure that would be in the teaching anyway. All right. It's almost 5:30. You got one more?
Sure. One more. Olivia Dearth, is there a simple formula or question you would suggest we can go through to know whether or not a person or teacher, music, show, etc., that would show us it is turning away from him?
Some of that is easy, some of it's not so easy. Okay, so teacher, if I'm your teacher, you simply got to just ask the question, is what you're hearing from anybody else lining up with what your teacher says, okay? That part's easy. Music, look, there is music that's just entertainment, I suppose. I'd be much more, believe it or not, I'd be much more concerned with Christian music with an agenda and a message than just country or rock and roll or whatever with whatever nonsense that's on, you know, because, you know, it's nothing really substantively important that's in those kind of musics, right? Okay? So so many people are like, oh, you know, rock and roll is evil, this is evil. Look, it's overtly and openly, you know what they're saying, okay? I'd be much more concerned listening to contemporary Christian music with its message that doesn't match your belief system, okay? And so those of you who know me know I listen to rock and roll. From the 80s especially, because that's my, you know, that's my teenage years, right? Okay, 70s, 80s. But I don't think when I'm singing the words of any of those songs that it's gonna affect my choice to behave like those songs are trying to inspire there. All right? I've never had those lifestyles. I'm 61 years old. I've sang those songs now for 40 years. Okay? Did not affect my behavior choices at all. However, if you're not solid in your beliefs and you start singing these Christianized songs that have very strong doctrinal, positional belief messages, that could start to play in on you. So that's as far as music. Shows and other things, again, I'm not one of those fearful people that think, oh, you watch this and watch that or listen to this or read these books or whatever. Recognize the level of influence something has on you. Okay? And also recognize, do you know the difference between something that's for entertainment and something that has a different message? Okay? Christian music is not trying to just entertain you. It's trying to give you a message. All right? It's different. All right? So, you know, I would be very aware of the things that I'm inputting. Any inputs should be something you're concerned with. Okay? What you see, what you hear, okay? Those things are all inputs, very important inputs. So the music you listen to, the stuff you read, the stuff you watch, all right? But don't be all freaked out like the super Christians are about everything is whatever. I remember when everybody freaked out. So you guys weren't with us. This is like 20-something years ago when the Harry Potter books came out. And everybody in the congregation was having cows, okay? And I was like, get over it, all right? If you read one of the books, it didn't turn you into a witch, okay? And so I'm not encouraging you to go read the books. I don't care. I think there's other things that are much more problematic, okay, than that, okay? So just be careful. Like some of you have marriage issues and you're going to go get yourself some good Christian books, good being the in quotes, Christian books on marriage and find yourself getting a very Christian way of doing everything. And it's going to get and interfere with some of the other stuff that you should be doing differently instead of coming and getting that counsel from me. And so they have a very specific way, we'll call it a Christian way of doing things, all right? And those things I think are actually more problematic than the overtly worldly things, okay? Because that which is overtly worldly, you're already not attracted to, you might find it entertaining, and that's it. It's the stuff that you're trying to glean from, trying to take it as something to help your lives, but is somewhat sideways at times that could really get you sideways at times. Does that make more sense? All right? Okay. So, you know. And so I'm not a big fan of the people that viciously attack, and I've been viciously attacked because I said I went and saw the Avengers movie or I went and did something. I was like, oh my gosh, get over it. Okay? Seriously, we had people in our congregation back in the day that, you know, if I had mentioned that from the microphone that, you know, I went and saw something, whatever, that they thought was, you know, demonic or something. I mean, you know. Anybody have people like that come over your house and want to see what your movie list looks like in your bookcase and want to see what books you got and they're checking everything out and, oh my gosh, I'm glad those people don't come here anymore. I'm talking about some specific people that go from way back, but I'm glad they don't come here anymore. Okay? As a matter of fact, I'm surprised they never visited since then just to see, you know, back then we had like 40 people. Now we've got, we had 169 people here today. Wow. You know? That's bigger than most of the feasts you went to, Uncle Bob, with us, right? I mean, you know, I mean, that's more than we ever had at the Mount Lake Ranch. We couldn't fit that many, all right? So just kind of keep that in mind. But anyway, that should cover it. I hope that was a blessing to everyone.